going down for real. Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
For the third straight game, the Browns game ended on a field goal, but for the second time in three games, it was a loss for the Browns, 26-23 to the Denver Broncos, their second straight overtime game on the season. And it was a game in which they held Peyton Manning to a 53.3 quarterback rating. They intercepted him three times. They held the Broncos to 4 of 18 on third downs defensively, but still on the day. They ended up giving in the with the overtime, included 442 yards of offense, and unfortunately too many points, 26. Both teams coming up with a defensive touchdown in this one, Aqib Talib with a pick six for Denver. Carlos Dansby with a pick six on his second of two. The team even got an interception in overtime from Barkevious Mingo in a zone blitz situation. They showed blitz, backed off, dropped into a zone.
Oh, how nice that looked.
It was nice. Should have been spotted at the 37, by the way, but wouldn't have mattered. The Browns went negative on three straight plays. It was one of those games where you feel like we're getting closer. Benjamin, 9 catches, 117 yards. Barnage, 3 catches, 39. 2 touchdowns for Gary Barnage. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it was not enough for this Browns team, who still gave up 152 yards on the ground, 4.6 yards a carry, to a Denver team that came into this one averaging just 71 yards rushing a game. The Browns certainly had their chances. There are some things that people are going to debate for a long time. Timeouts, two-point conversions. The coach gave his rationale for them. But this is a game that when you left it, and I know in talking to some of the players afterwards, that they absolutely felt that they could have won and let it get away.
No, there's no doubt. And I mean, for me as a fan, sitting in the stands watching that football game, I felt the same thing. And as I mentioned last week against the Baltimore Ravens, something, I just had a feeling that somehow, some way, you know, that jinx, whatever anybody wants to call it, that always seemed to go against the Browns, we figured out last week against the Baltimore Ravens. And I had that same feeling by getting to overtime and surviving and taking the tie, and then Mingo gets the pick. I just felt like we were finally making plays when it mattered. We just didn't make the next play. And I think in some cases, that's the next step for this football team. Okay, we can get there, but who's our killer? Who's our finisher? Who's our guy that does not shy away from the moment? And in some cases, I'm sure guys will look around the locker room and go, oh, we're not going to shy. You know, we want to make that play. Then let us see it. Let us see you make that sack. And I consistently say this. What's so frustrating to me, what's so frustrating to, I'm sure, many Browns fans is, if you are a fan of football, you watch other games than just the Cleveland Browns. And their playmakers, the guys that they pay a lot of money to, make the plays in crunch time repeatedly, week after week. And for us, we don't know who it's going to be.
And that's the truth. And in this game, though, you got the plays. You got it from Carlos Dansby. You got the play from Barkevious Mingo. Offensively, just couldn't get the job done against a very good defense. And it was. They were a very good defense, you know, of the Denver Broncos. Came into the game number one in the NFL. They held the Browns on the day, whereas the Browns gave 442 yards total offense. They gave up 298 to the Browns. 4 sacks on the day. They had the pick six. So, yes, they are very, very good. Don't get me wrong. But this was a game that you came out of it feeling like, yes, this is one that the Browns had to have and that they should have had, because there's a huge difference between 2-4 and 3-3. Huge difference.
There is. And I think as you go on the road, and I said this last night on the Browns radio network after the game for my call-in, that difference is, you take the mindset to continue that split in your next two non-division football games, and you say you beat the Rams, and say you take one on the nose at home against the Cardinals, and then you have that stretch of division games, you know, and everybody's playing good. Baltimore is the bottom dweller, but you have an opportunity to beat the Steelers, you know, beat the Bengals, get beat by the, you know, beat by the Bengals, and then have an opportunity, you know, later in the season, but to get the division play where you're already 1-0. Still, as if your season has never started at 500. You're at 3-3, you go to 4-3, you go to 4-4, and boom, you win another division opponent, you're consistently in the hunt. And I know at 2-4, we're not technically out of it, and there's tons of football to play, but it's just a day after, it's very hard to swallow when we just didn't make that next play. We made the one, but we couldn't make the second to become the knockout blow.
And I think that's what was so tough about it. That's what you watched that game, and you just felt like, okay, we're going to do it, we're going to do it, we're going to do it. And then ultimately, they couldn't get the job done. Josh McCown, first quarterback all year to throw for multiple touchdowns against the Denver Broncos, but he threw two interceptions in this game as well. And one of them was the pick six early to Aqib Talib, where he made a very good read, jumped something that clearly he had seen on tape. And in the other one, you know, he was trying to make it looked like he was trying to get the ball out of bounds, just throw it away, wasn't able to. The interception with 53 seconds left in regulation.
And a question there, could he not have thrown it into the ground? You know, in that same direction, knowing he had a cluster of Browns, as well as Denver Bronco guys as well. But short arm one, 15 yards in that direction, avoid the penalty, and you live to see another down.
I know. Josh McCown, by the way, the first quarterback to throw for multiple touchdowns in four consecutive games for the Browns since Derek Anderson in 2007. He had gone over 100 passes in a row without an interception for that pick by Aqib Talib. Travis Coons remained perfect in the game, 12 of 12 on the field goals. Their kicker, Brandon McManus, had his first miss on the season. Just a very, 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 very frustrating, I think, game for the Browns, because when you come out of it and you look at it, overall, I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job. There was obviously the breakdown on the Shaq Barrett sack where he came in untouched. I don't know if that was on Malcolm Johnson. I don't know if that was on the quarterback to set the protection. I don't know if that was on the offensive line. I don't know what happened there. But overall, when you think about the fact that Von Miller, zero sacks, zero quarterback hits.
Von Miller's name was never called yesterday.
Non-factor. Joe Thomas and Mitchell Schwartz both did an excellent job
against
Von Miller. It was Shaq Barrett who was the big disruptive force for that team. Brandon Marshall had a sack. Malik Jackson had a sack. And Antonio Smith half a sack as well. But Shaq Barrett was a guy, we had talked about him during the week. I said, listen, you look at his pass rushing productivity, this guy is pretty darn good. And Shaq Barrett was very good. And he stepped up for a team that was without DeMarcus Ware, then lost Shane Ray.
Yes.
But you saw a Browns team that had an opportunity, I thought, to really take a big step forward, beat a previously unbeaten team, and it was right there. After the Mingo interception, you're thinking it's first down at the 39. You got to get 10 yards, maybe for 8 yards for Coons to get a shot at it, and they were unable to even gain a single yard. It was interesting because it was a three-play sequence that featured a pitch out to Robert Turbin.
Boo.
Negative yards. Sack, sack. And that was it.
Yeah, I just think that, and I know that everybody's second-guessing everything right now, the pitch play to Turbin and the few things that I did hear about pitching the ball backwards and sideways, when I felt some success in the fourth quarter with us running the football, was running it right at them.
Yep.
And you get into a second and six. Get into second and seven. How many times do we have second and seven? You know, after getting 3 yards on first down. Now, ideally, you'd like to have four, four and a half, five, and then you get a little, you know, you get a fruitful second down opportunity, but it wasn't ideal. And I just thought to have second and 14, second and 13 on a run play, and I just thought we got a little too hokey, a little too tricky. And I just think, and then continuing moving forward, why not just get quick, get us 5, 6, 7, get the ball into Andrew Hawkins' hands, Gabriel's hands, somebody, you know, at 3 or 4 yards and have them make a guy miss, spin forward to get 7 or 8 back and put you in third and medium.
The amazing thing to me, though, is that it really seems like this is a two-trick passing attack. It's Benjamin and it's Barnage, and that's it. Nobody else had more than 25 yards on the day. Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell had 5 catches. Barnage and Benjamin had 12, but you had Gabriel 1 for 5, Brian Hartline without a catch again. You had Andrew Hawkins 1 for 25. So amongst the receivers, the only one really that did anything, Benjamin, was 9 for 117. And that quick slant seemed to be there all day.
It was.
Seemed to be there all day, and they couldn't take advantage of it. I mean, honestly, on the good side of things, you get Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, probably the best receiver tandem in the game. And yes, Sanders got you for the 75-yarder. They were combined. They saw 28 targets on the day. They recorded 14 catches. Now, the 75-yarder makes Sanders' numbers look a heck of a lot better at 109 yards. But for the most part, you held them fairly well in check.
And I think at a point in the game, and I paid attention to this, they were frustrated.
Oh, very.
Emmanuel Sanders more so than Demaryius Thomas, because I think he's a little bit more even keel. But I know Emmanuel Sanders is getting frustrated. And the one time that Peyton missed him, you know, in that little curl in the zone, I think he threw the ball a little bit outside. He was frustrated.
He was very frustrated. Yeah. Jermon Williams did a good job on him. And I know Pierre Desir gave up 10 catches, and you're just, oh, you're Pierre Paul. I thought all in all, Demaryius Thomas is a very good receiver, one of the very best in the NFL. When a guy gets 17 targets,
you're working that day.
That's a lot of targets for any receiver in the NFL. 17 for Thomas, who did have a couple drops as well, but 10 catches, 111 yards. They didn't let him get the big play. They didn't let him get away from him, and I thought they did a good job overall. Peyton was 26 of 48, 6 yards an attempt, 3 interceptions. I mean, there
were a lot
of
53.3
and a QBR of 25.2. There were a lot of good things to point to in this game for the Browns defense, but still not enough. 442 yards. But this one was more on the offense
because
the chances were there to go ahead and get the ball in. They were not able to do it. It was amazing, though. They're 4 of 18 on third down. That's a great job by your defense getting off the field against Peyton Manning. 4 of 18. And yet somehow they still got to 442 total yards, 5.5 a play. The Browns just 3.9 a play. 6 yards a pass for them, just 4.4 for the Browns. And by the way, that offensive line, not very good. We didn't sack Peyton Manning once, and we hit him twice.
And they ran for 152 yards, averaging 4.6 yards a carry.
And that's the one that kills you. These guys were averaging 71 yards rushing a game.
That, to me, is the glaring situation from a Cleveland Browns standpoint. Because I think that's a great defense, and watching the film, I think, again, Josh McCown was getting beaten, battered around. You know, the one blocking let up where Shaq came in and got the freebie sack. But they were challenging every route. You know, a lot of catch tackles, not a lot of yards after the catch. They're a great tackling. I mean, you saw T.J. Ward's frustration, you know, when Barnage got the one catch. That's the killer instinct that have on that back end that makes them so great. But ultimately, their willingness to run the football, and I saw it right out of the rip, you know, in that pistol formation, that was what they wanted to do. Everything they did came off of their run. If they could not run, Peyton Manning could not beat you throwing the ball 50 times.
No. You watched them. It was the least impressive I've seen a quarterback. Now, he made a couple very nice throws, but just watching the ball, it seemed like it was in the air forever. He didn't look comfortable.
I think Demaryius dropped a couple because they weren't coming in as a spiral. There were these fluttering ducks.
That one was huge at the end, certainly at the end of the first at the end of regulation,
yeah.
On that first down play, had an opportunity to get. He got free, kind of pushed off on Pierre on a deep dig,
yeah.
And got a lot of separation, was going to be able to run for a little while. Yes, that would have been a big one. But overall, you felt like you did enough things to win the game.
Yeah.
What the Browns did do effectively was score touchdowns when they got down there. They didn't get down there often, but when they did, they scored. And that's why it was close.
And they were 0-3 in the red zone.
And they were 0-3, right. They were held to field goals,
yep.
And the Browns were scoring touchdowns. They had their touchdowns came on two big plays, a pick six from Tlaib and the 75-yarder Emmanuel Sanders, who, by the way, when he ran by me, was flying.
Yes. And for those people, we know it was man-to-man coverage. I thought Poyer took a little bit of a bad angle, and I know he's running fast. But Tremont Williams got a hand on the football. He had one hand right in the breadbasket. He just basically had two hands on it and was able to secure the catch.
It was just a perfect
ball. It was a perfect ball.
Perfect ball.
Yes, it was.
Team's got to be able to figure out the run defense, though, as they go to the drawing board, because I'll tell you this. If they don't, Todd Gurley is going to run wild against them.
And someone I know has him in fantasy.
You. This guy. What's got two thumbs?
The Wavis.
A national championship.
Off the Wavis.
And a Super Bowl championship. I mean, that's bad for
me. I won't start him, though.
Good. Good idea. Good idea.
I got other guys.
Up front, I think they've got to be better, but you made plays defensively at least. To generate 3 turnovers, you hadn't had an interception since week 1 to get 3 of them on Peyton Manning, who now has 7 in his last 3 games alone, was a good sign. They've got to be able to finish these games, though, because you look at the Browns. Go back week 1. Big loss. Josh McCown gets hurt on the first drive, so at least there's something around that big loss. Week 2, big win with Johnny Manziel against Tennessee Titans. Week 3, you have the ball driving to tie, throw an interception there, but a little bit of a desperate situation. But nonetheless, one possession game, you've got the ball. Week 4, field goal loss at the buzzer to San Diego. Week 5, field goal win in overtime for you. Week 6, field goal loss in overtime for Denver. I mean, these games, they're right here, but they've got to find a way to win. And when we come back, I'm going to talk to you because you've been on so many winning teams. Yep. What is the difference between those teams that can't find that way and the teams that can? We'll talk about that. We'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850. We're sure you have a lot of reaction to what you saw out there on the field yesterday for the Browns and the Broncos. Zagur and Wilhelm, Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.